Express each year.
Let's get it started in here.
It's morning again, and waking up isn't easy. At least I know my favorite show is on. It's 6 a.m. There ain't nobody like them. I just know they'll never steer me wrong. Sam, John, Drew, and Sam, speaking out, talking to me, talking to you. Justice and Drew, mornings have never been so good. And Drew, I never miss a show. I don't think I could.
Then I look at you.
Can you dig it?
And the world's alright with
the few times that I'm not like here, because we're usually all together. Is this what you guys do? Like, if I'm not here, does this happen, or is this?
What is that? What do you mean?
You guys just like, you know, you guys are just already so contentious.
When Drew says something, I get defensive.
Not contentious at all. I was just... There's no contention on my part.
Your shirt says contention on it.
I actually...
Bold white letters.
I am contentious with everyone, so...
I gave Sam a gentle reminder that we have Jason Lewis on the show today at 8:35, and he connects to the show in a unique fashion, and it needs to be checked before each time he comes on.
And I said, yes, Drew.
That's not what you said.
In Drew's defense, that is not what you said.
She spit fire right in my face.
I said
she went all Drogon on me.
I said, of course, Drew. I indeed am prepared for Jason Lewis.
I almost wish.
And then I gave him coffee and a biscuit.
Nobody can relate to this in any way, shape, or form. Right. But I almost wish, because I was thinking about this earlier, Drew, when you walked in, that like our first interactions with one another are so weird. Like oftentimes, like I won't talk to anybody, right? I'd be walking the halls and doing my thing in the morning, but 9 times out of 10, I don't. Even if I see somebody, I'm not having a conversation or anything. So often, the first like other human interaction I get is Drew. And 99% of the time, my first other human interaction is Drew walking in the door singing some ridiculous song. And then usually, Sam, when you show up, the first time we see you is when you walk in the studio and I make some weird, awkward comment.
It's probably my fault. That's all accurate.
It's just weird exchanges and a bunch of irrelevant conversations.
And I'm usually singing the last thing I heard or making something up on the spot. That ends, and then it's like silence until Sam shows up.
Because I'm just warming up to other bodies being near me.
Right.
There's another human in the room.
I got to set the table for Sam. And then Sam shows up, and then conversation begins. And it's awkward and weird.
I don't think it's awkward and weird.
Are you kidding? Did you not see what you did when you walked in the studio this morning? Put your arms out and did a weird dance. And you're like, I'm here. It was incredibly awkward.
That's right, everybody. I'm here. Well, because I walked in and I don't even know what John was saying. You said something funny about me being here, and I was like, that's right. I'm here.
Yeah, totally not awkward. Not even a little bit.
I think I was in the middle of telling my NASCAR story. I think that's what it was. Yeah, because I was out and about yesterday with Kyle and Melinda. It was just a really awkward sort of day of people being gone and cars not being where they needed to be and Logan going to work. And so on a rare occasion, I was out on a Sunday. We were at Olive Garden and the race had been rain delayed, and then it looked like they dried it after 2 hours and they were getting ready to go green. And heaven forbid I'm not home in my chair watching the TV when the green flag drops. because you don't know what. I honestly don't know what can happen if I'm not, if that doesn't happen, because that never happens. Like, I don't know.
My
like,
guess is they'll probably start racing. And when you get home to your chair,
yeah,
they'll still be racing.
I know. And I'm recording it, and I could back it up. And I also have SiriusXM in my car, and I can listen to it. But it doesn't matter.
None of those things matter.
So I raced home to pull in the driveway to be listening to NASCAR on SiriusXM. And I started raining again, and they called the race. That's pretty much what Melinda did. And I'm like, do they not see the radar? There's a stupid theory. I don't know if you've ever heard this before. Daryl Waltrip has this.
I guarantee you. I haven't.
Daryl Waltrip has this theory, and they've actually tracked it. You know, like you and your stats on the news quiz, right?
Right.
They've actually tracked. They actually have stats for this. He has a theory that when the cars start racing on the track, that it creates this circular vortex that it keeps the weather away from coming over the racetrack. So whenever this happens, I think the logic is, well, sometimes Waltrip's right. So maybe if we get the cars going when the rain hits, it'll push it away. And they just didn't get the cars rolling fast enough.
Yeah, I'm not buying that theory.
Yeah, they have stats. And the data actually bears some truth to it.
Yeah, but that's
about as much as climate change.
Correlation, but causation. There's a whole thing there. All right, on the show today, we do have our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer, joining us at 7 o'clock. As mentioned earlier, Mr. Right, Jason Lewis at 8:35, and Sam's top five coming up here in the next segment. Sam, have you successfully scoured the internet?
Of course, Drew.
Okay.
I have.
You sure? Are you sure?
I am.
Okay. Oh, my God. I'm terrified of Sam today.
welcome to my world.
Glenn Beck next.
Deserve the truth.
That's when you guys are supposed to cheer.
Yes, that's right. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, Justice and Drew. Getting ready to dive into Sam's top five. Did you have a chance to, I perused it. There's a little bit of it in our prep this morning. This is Wall Street Journal article. Music superstars are now the one percenters. Huge stars like Beyonce and Taylor Swift are dominating concert tour business like never before as music's top 1%. Ooh. Right, takes home an increasingly large share of the pie. Yeah, the articles call it, you know, music superstars are the new one percenters. I got such a huge problem with the article. The article gives off the impression like that pie, like, is just one pie.
Yeah.
It's an infinite pie. there's plenty of pie for everybody.
Right, right.
Just because they're out there making a lot of money with huge, massive tours, they don't tour very often, and the people that do tour a lot charge a lot less and don't have big, extravagant shows. So this, I don't know, it reminds me of just this whole perceived divided culture that we have.
Yeah, no, we need the government to step up and address the income disparities in the music business. I mean, why should, you know, Taylor Swift and Beyonce and Garth Brooks,
U2,
you know, why should they get all the money? You know, when
yeah, 60.
When bands like Little Ricky and the Drifters
over here, you know. Oh, Little Ricky and the Drifters.
Playing the VFW for like just coins. That's not cool. That's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, they're making music too.
Yeah.
60% of all concert ticket revenue worldwide went to the top 1% of performers ranked by revenue.
It's not like if you go to a Taylor Swift concert, you can't also see Little Ricky and the Drifters.
Exactly.
At the VFW down the street. Like, you, if you're someone who goes to concerts, if you're someone who Taylor Swift and Little Ricky and the Drifters appeals to you, but, yeah, like both of them do, then you can go to both and then they both get your money. It's just that people like Taylor Swift and Beyonce just have a big fan base.
Remember when they said that, you know, like the file sharing technology, the peer-to-peer technology was going to destroy the music business?
Yeah.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
It just took out Tower Records. That was it. And it needed to go away anyway.
Right.
Tower Records needed to go bye-bye.
It took out people that weren't really acting, you know, to all that smartly. You know, it took out people that weren't doing business the right way or doing business well.
Because people that were smart about it, like Taylor Swift and Beyonce, adjusted well to the changing market.
Well, and the real, if you're going to look at any culprit, it's not
it's got nothing, very little to do with the acts of these big ticket item acts that are out there performing, and everything to do with the entertainment, once again, that we can get at home. People now will spend a lot of money to go see a big performer because they're getting a spectacle. Mm-hmm. People are way less likely, I would think, okay, I don't have any data in front of me, but way less likely to perhaps go see, you know, Dino and the Drifters or whatever. you know, if they can just watch it at home.
Little Ricky replaced Dino.
Oh, sorry. Little Ricky. I forgot.
Dino, rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, Dino. But people can watch it on YouTube. They can watch Little Ricky and Dino at the comfort of their own home on a big screen TV.
You got those people that like don't like Little Ricky, you know, that just pine for the days of Dino, and they can't get over the fact that, you know, Dino's not with us,
right?
You know, but I'm telling you, man, the Drifters, they're solid and they're good no matter who's fronting them.
You know, we need like a biopic on the Drifters and their front men.
Have we settled on that, by the way? Is it biopic or biopic?
It's biopic.
Biopic. Okay. I'm sorry.
No. I didn't know for sure. I honestly didn't know.
Nobody was coming at you.
No, I legitimately thought that maybe I didn't, because I've said it both ways. So please.
I believe it's biopic.
I have no.
You're probably right, because then you got the bio of biography.
Right.
The pitch of the picture.
Yes. We solved this one.
Drew, if given a choice between Dino and the Grifters.
Drifters.
Now they're changing their name.
Would you go see them, or would you go see Craig Robinson again?
Probably Dino and the Drifter.
Oh, okay.
You didn't enjoy the show?
How often do you get the chance to see a dead man?
That's true. Yeah, Drew went and saw Craig Robinson over the weekend.
Yeah, from The Office, from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Hosted.
He's funny. I like him.
He was very funny. That was a very entertaining show.
Yeah.
Very. I was impressed at how... There's no way to say this without it sounding like I'm being disparaging. I'm not. I had a wonderful time, and I think he's super talented, and I think it was a very funny show. But he has figured out a shtick to do a show that comes across as very low effort.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he gets up there with his piano, he plays familiar songs, the crowd sings along, he throws in a funny line or a little joke here or there, everybody laughs, and then he moves on to the next song.
Yeah, for a short period of time, you know, Ernest was really popular. I don't think he was putting a lot of effort into it either.
It's like comedy karaoke.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a comedy karaoke show.
That sounds awful.
It wasn't. It was hilarious.
No, okay. Every time I've seen him do that, whether he's done it on The Office or when he did it in a Hot Tub Time Machine, it's so, like, when you were telling me, I'm like, yeah, I could totally watch that for an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, no, it was great.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I had a blast.
But you do it every morning when you walk in.
I do. I can very much relate to the humor of Craig Robinson. Yeah, but it's not like stand-up. You know, it's not like he's going up there and doing a set and telling
jokes.
He's just up there being Craig Robinson and goofing around on the piano, and he's an entertaining and funny guy, so it works.
He's also got the celebrity part of it too, so you've got like a 10%. They're already, he's just standing there, is already entertaining.
I'm like 5 feet away from Craig Robinson.
Exactly. So he's already got the audience on that front.
And sometimes that's enough.
Yeah, absolutely. This segment of Justice and Drew's powered by our friends over at Early Bird Electric. They sponsor Sam's Top 5 every day.
Number one.
North Korea's Kim Jong-un has overseen the testing of multiple rocket launchers recently, from Fox News.
Yeah, he needs to knock that off.
Yeah, come on, Kim. The leader of the Hermit Kingdom supervised a strike drill of long-range multiple rocket launchers and unspecified tactical guided weapons into the East Sea on Saturday while telling troops to remain on alert. North Korea's official Korean Central News Agency said on Sunday that Kim Jong-un expressed great satisfaction over the drills, which were to, quote, estimate and inspect the operating ability and the accuracy of striking duty performance of the weaponry. Kim also urged troops to remember that, quote, the iron truth that genuine peace and security are ensured and guaranteed only by powerful strength.
He's a wordsmith.
I mean, is he? I don't know.
Does it not
translate well?
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, because it just always sounds so awkward. But maybe that's actually how he talks. I don't know. The weapons launches came amidst all diplomatic talks after President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met in Vietnam for their second summit. But negotiations did kind of fizzle out. The North requested sanctions relief in exchange for partial denuclearization measures. The U.S. balked at that request, insisting that sanctions would not be relaxed until complete denuclearization. Trump said on Saturday on Twitter that he still believes a nuclear deal with North Korea will happen. He tweeted that Kim fully realizes the great economic potential of North Korea and will do nothing to interfere or end it.
He's still an awful person. You can't frame him any other way. He's a horrible, awful, murdering dictator. He still has to maintain his control and power and what he believes is a way to make sure he has respect among his people. We are still in a better position than we were prior to Trump getting elected with our with our sort of standing with them. This doesn't come as a huge surprise.
Right. No, it doesn't. And this is going to probably continue for the time being. But everything you said is true. We are in a much better place than we were a few years ago. And, there's no reason to think that things won't continue to move in that direction. But it's not like this is going to happen quickly. It's not like this is going to happen without hiccups or setbacks. And no reasonable person would expect any type of progress to be made without hiccups and setbacks.
Yeah, this gets a lot more attention right now because of the fact that we've actually had some attempt at ongoing negotiations, and so this type of action gets a lot more attention.
And it's fodder for the anti-Trump crowd to go, look, see?
Right.
You know, because they would rather have a nuclear threat in North Korea than have a successful Trump presidency.
Yeah, I didn't see any comments over the weekend about this. I didn't. Whatever.
In some more foreign affairs news, the USS Lincoln strike group was deployed to send Iran a clear and unmistakable message from Fox News. The U.S. is sending the USS Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group and a bomber task force to the Middle East in order to send a clear and unmistakable message to the Iranian regime. That's according to National Security Advisor John Bolton. Bolton said the deployment was in response to a number of troubling and escalatory indications and warnings on the part of Tehran, but did not elaborate. Such deployments are rarely announced in advance. Bolton said any attack on the United States' interests or on those of our allies will be met with unrelenting force. The United States is not seeking war with the Iranian regime, but we are fully prepared to respond to any attack, whether by proxy, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or regular Iranian forces.
Things are getting ugly in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, between Iran and Israel and the Hamas attacks and things like that. We're going to spend some more time on this later. We were supposed to have David on last week, David Gartenstein-Ross, and his schedule couldn't really work out. So we're going to try again to get him on soon this week to really go in depth as to everything that's transpired in the Middle East over the last few days.
Yeah, this has everything to do with Israel. We'll explain coming back in just a moment, and we'll have some further commentary about that as well much later in the show when we talk with Jason Lewis at 103.5 FM.
Welcome back. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Okay, let's do this.
We are in the midst of Sam's top five for a Monday.
Number two.
The city of Minneapolis has agreed to a historic $20 million settlement with Justine Ruschick's family. From Fox 9, following days of settlement discussion, the city of Minneapolis has agreed to a $20 million settlement in the civil lawsuit with the family of Justine Ruschick Damond. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey announced that the city is going to be paying the family of Justine Ruschick $20 million, $2 million of which the Ruschick family will donate to the Minneapolis Foundation's Fund for Safe Communities. The city council voted unanimously to approve the settlement.
This happened so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, so quick. What was it, like 24 hours after they announced the civil lawsuit, the city of Minneapolis was like, nope. We're noping out of here. Here's $20 million. I believe that's like the maximum amount that they can settle for.
Yeah.
They're like, nope, here, take $20 million, please. We don't want any more coverage of this. Yeah. We don't want anything else to come out about this. We certainly don't want anything happening in an open courtroom because we did a terrible job here, and there's definitely culpability on the part of the city of Minneapolis and the former Hodges administration and the former police chief, and I don't think they wanted any of that information coming out and being public, so they just, here you go, $20 million.
Yeah, that was my takeaway too, especially how quickly it seemed as if social media was starting to put the focus back on Mohammed Noor and his training and the reason why he was, for you know, a lot of people's minds, the reason why he was hired. That focus seemed to be coming to light, and a lot of people were talking about it. It's anecdotal, but when it came down, I'm thinking the same thing that you were. I'm like, yeah, they want this to be over as quickly as possible.
Mayor Fry said, "This is not a victory for anyone, but rather a way for our city to move forward. I do believe we will move forward together, united in the shared belief that such a tragedy should never occur in our city."
Well, we didn't have that shared belief before.
Yeah.
I hate comments like that. I really, really do.
Yeah, stupid political speak where they're actually not saying nothing, just stringing a bunch of words together.
Trying to sound good.
That's all that is.
The Ruzczyk's family attorney, Bob Bennett, said, "This is an unmistakable message to change the Minneapolis Police Department in ways that will help all of its communities." Bennett said the family had hoped the amount would be transformative. Police Chief Madaria Arredondo said that there have already been departmental changes, such as to the body camera policy since her death.
Yeah, and Mayor Fry's reaction to this is to forbid Minneapolis police officers from taking self-defense training.
That makes all the sense in the world.
Like, even on their own free time, on their own personal time. You know, I mean, the type of training that he's banning is designed to help police officers make better decisions in those split second life or death decisions that they have to make. That's designed to make them better equipped and better able to identify threats and also to identify when things are not a threat, which would have been very helpful in this instance.
Yeah, he's part politician and part activist. You know, and there's different levels to that activism. Most of the activists on the Minneapolis City Council, or most of the leadership on the Minneapolis City Council, are activists. This is the type of mentality that they have. You know, and Mayor Fry is kind of a combination of the two. He's part activist and part politician, but none of it's rational. There's no common sense involved here. It's all about his own political future and also making sure the other activists that voted him into office are happy.
And it's about optics. I mean, the whole banning warrior training thing, it's about optics. You know, it's about him being able to go and say, look, we're going to have a kinder and gentler and nicer police department. We don't want warriors on our police department. We want nice people.
We'll take away their guns and give them all flashlights.
Yeah, exactly.
And flowers.
And flowers, right.
Number three.
Louis C.K. has announced 8 shows next week in Minneapolis from the Star Tribune. It was only a matter of time before his attempted comeback would include a stop at his favorite venue, Acme Comedy Club. Acme Comedy Company, I'm sorry. That time is now. The once celebrated comedian who lost his TV show and many fans after admitting to 2017 to inappropriate sexual behavior announced on Saturday that he's booked nearly a full week at the Minneapolis Club. He's going to do 2 sets a night starting on Tuesday and running through Friday. CK has said on many occasions that Acme is close to his heart and credits the owner, Louis Lee, for giving him confidence early in his career. He last appeared at Acme in 2016, making a surprise appearance after a sold-out show at Target Center, showing his support for Lee in his battle for a nearby parking lot developer. Louis C.K. Started returning to comedy clubs 8 months ago, mostly unannounced spots in New York, and some audience members have walked out when he took the stage. Lee has said several times over the past year that he'd be happy to welcome C.K. back to his club and is prepared for possible protests.
Yeah, the backlash started immediately upon this announcement. You know, I got the email from, you know, the Acme Insider email on, I think it was Saturday morning. Was at Acme on Friday night and actually had a conversation with the owner Lewis there, and he said, "I can't say who's coming next week. You know, we can't make any announcement until tomorrow. But it's going to be a big week and it's going to be busy and it's going to get a lot of attention." And so, you know, I was curious and got the email Saturday morning, and when I saw it, I was like, Oh, yeah. So the backlash, you know, started immediately. It's ridiculous. Look, I mean, you know, what Louis C.K. did obviously was wrong. He put out a statement owning up to his behavior and, you know, saying he was working on changing. And it's been a few years now. And in my opinion, you know, I mean, everybody deserves a second chance. Everybody deserves a shot at redemption. What he did, in my opinion, I know this is an unpopular thing to say, wasn't so egregious that he should have the earth salted around him and never be able to work again. And him and Lewis have a long, close relationship. So this shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody.
And keeping it, because it's only 6:43, keeping it clean, and just to remind everybody, the allegations against him were his meeting up with women and then requesting to do things in front of them. Am I correct with that?
More or less.
More or less keeping. Okay, I wanted to make sure that was my recollection, because right. I remember when we covered it the last time. Again, not appropriate doing that thing with my fingers, but at the same time, certainly not right. to the extent of what we've seen a lot of individuals being accused of in the middle of the hashtag MeToo movement.
What Louis C.K. is mostly guilty of here is the power dynamic at play. You know, he's a successful comedian, and either it was ignorance, or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I can't read his mind, but it wasn't. To the best of my knowledge, like, everything that happened was, like, he sought consent.
Right.
But the dynamic in play was, well, if I don't consent, he could make things difficult for me for my career. There's no, I don't know that he ever did that.
Right.
But that was the pressure that the women found themselves under.
It seems to fall under almost that idea of, when we talk about privilege, there's different degrees of privilege, and everybody has a certain level of privilege. And it seems like for a guy like Louis C.K., because of who he was, because of his celebrity status, he had the privilege of being able to come in contact with people and have interest from individuals who would normally not be interested in a guy like Louis C.K., but because he's Louis C.K. and he's funny and he's somewhat famous and popular, you know, people gravitate towards that. And so he used that privilege potentially to his advantage. And again, it's not downplaying the severity of what he did. He did come forward. He did admit it. He did apologize for it.
Yeah, he owned up to it. He owned up to it, and he said he's, you know, trying to change. I think, you know, this is not uncommon in the world of stand-up comedy. You know, a lot of the people that get successful in that, not all, but, you know, sure. a lot of them get successful in part because there's something kind of weird or broken in them. And they use comedy to kind of get that out. And I think, you know, Louis C.K. is a prime example of that type of personality. He's a dark guy.
Number 4.
Endgame is projected to eclipse Avatar as the highest grossing film ever.
And a much better film.
What I'm not going to challenge you on that. Drew is like, I was going to throw something at him for crying out loud.
He ducked under the table.
No, look, I love me some Avatar, but to compare either of them in terms of film quality, I'm not going to. People's complaints against Avatar are valid. Yeah. You have people, let me put it this way. When you go to like a San Diego Comic-Con, you'll see plenty of people dressed up as any one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe superheroes. Yeah, show me the next Comic-Con where a person's dressed up like a Na'vi, for crying out loud. I mean, nobody is.
People do it. I don't know.
Nobody. Hardly anybody.
People who want an excuse to paint their bodies blue and walk around looking like they're naked are going to dress up as a Na'vi.
Avatar is the anomaly, man. Avatar did not enter into sort of the pop culture zeitgeist in the way that these superheroes have.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Nobody's having lengthy conversations about the future of Natiri, you know what I mean? Even though we're going to get a whole bunch of other movies. No, man, the superheroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and even DC, it's a heck of a lot more relevant in pop culture than Avatar is, for crying out loud.
From Bloomberg, is Walt Disney Company's Avengers Endgame rocket store to second record-breaking weekend. One analyst has made a bold prediction. Wade Holden, an entertainment industry forecaster at Kagan, S&P Global Market Intelligence, now expects the superhero movie to eclipse 2009's Avatar as the highest grossing film of all time. That means Endgame would have to generate at least another $1 billion in box office revenue globally in the coming weeks. Already, Endgame is in the top five, raking in $1.79 billion as of Friday morning. That puts it just behind a quartet of movies that made over $2 billion. That would be Avatar, Titanic, Star Wars The Force Awakens, and Avengers Infinity War. The figures aren't inflation adjusted, but having the top grossing film is still a major bragging right for the industry. James Cameron wrote and directed both of the current top two movies, so Endgame threatens to push him down in the ranks. But he'll have another shot at box office glory next year when Avatar 2, part of a franchise now owned by Disney,
of course it is,
will be released in December 2020. How many are there, like, really any big franchises that aren't owned by Disney at this point?
DC.
Huh?
DC.
Can you call DC a big franchise?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, when you look at intellectual properties, we look at IPs, you know, Harry Potter, that's Warner Brothers, yeah. You know.
Oh, okay.
A lot of the big ones are now owned by Disney, especially with them gobbling up Fox. Look, the only way that Avatar 2 is able to do anything close to what Avatar 1 was, and this is what James Cameron is good at, is whatever spectacle he has attached to these next set of movies.
Yeah.
When James Cameron puts out a new film, there's usually something attached to it that brings butts to the theaters. And he's exceptional. When you look at his Terminator 2, Titanic, yeah. Avatar, when you look at what he's done with all three of those films, especially Titanic and Avatar, there is something major. And I don't know what it's going to be for Avatar 2, but I guarantee he's got something up his sleeve that's going to drive the masses out to, you know, out to the theaters.
Yeah. Still, I can't imagine a scenario where Avatar 2 will repeat its success of the original,
yeah.
and sort of enter that echelon of MCU Star Wars type of results. We'll see. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I think the big appeal of Avatar in the first place was it was like all new technology, and it was something that it was a lot of like stuff that we have never 3D, seen before.
Yeah. It was the 3D. Yeah. It was the movie that brought 3D back, and it was amazing, and it was beautiful, and it was a spectacle, and it was incredible to watch. Yeah. But it didn't necessarily age well.
Right.
It's like when you actually like start to digest the story of it, you're like, and so it was okay.
It was pretty to
look
at. It was
just gorgeous.
Yeah, it was absolutely gorgeous.
It's Ferngully. The CGI work in that is still
amazing.
Astounding.
Oh, absolutely.
You watch it today, and it's still unbelievable to me that those are CGI characters.
Yes,
when you watch it.
I agree 100%. But there's also like, you know, 100 other films that has astounding and beautiful and amazing CGI as well. So that aspect of it doesn't necessarily age very well.
Well, I think that since 2009, people have just become really spoiled.
Yes, I think you're right.
Number 5.
The Kentucky Derby winner, Maximum Security, was disqualified. Second place horse, Country House, was named the winner.
This was such a bizarre turn of events. I didn't get to see it live, but man, what a crazy story.
Yeah, and I don't... Well, go ahead and move forward with it. I don't want to comment on it.
From Care 11, Maximum Security led the Kentucky Derby every step of the way, except for the last one, into the winner's circle. That colt became the first winner disqualified for interference in the Derby's 145-year history, leading to an agonizing wait and an eventual stunning reversal that made the 65-1 long shot Country House the winner on Saturday. Country House finished second in the slop because it was really rainy.
It was.
Before objections were raised, causing a 20-minute delay while stewards repeatedly reviewed several angles of video footage before he was elevated into the winner's circle. That gave Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott his first Derby victory at age 65. Mott said, "It's bittersweet. You always want to win with a clean trip and have everybody recognize the horse as the very good horse and the great athlete that he is. Due to the disqualification, I think that some of that is a little diminished." Country House was dismissed as a long shot with a bad post on the far outside. It was only the Chestnut Colt's second win in 7 career starts and his first stakes victory.
He was a 65-1 underdog. And can you just imagine being the person who, when the race ends, because this happens, and you got a ticket with Country House as the winner, and you're like, oh, well.
Oh, no.
I lost that one. It was a long shot anyway. Not a big deal. Whatever. And then 20 minutes later, like,
where's all my pieces? I need some tape.
Well, and I read about the controversy, and then I saw the headline, I watched the video, and I couldn't pick it out. Like, I watched the race twice, and I'm like, I don't see the moment when it happened, and then I went back and I watched the one that highlighted it, and Trump was tweeting about this and thought that the call was bogus. I don't know what the rules are.
Sure.
I don't either.
For the horse racing, and for me, I watch it and I go, yeah, how do you not attribute that to the condition of the track and the horse's movement? I'm having a hard time understanding that.
So it really comes down to camera angle to be able to see what happened. It was really hard for me to tell as well, just like when you first initially watch it. But when you watch it slow down from multiple angles, what the issue was that the that Maximum Security interfered with the stride of a horse behind him
right.
by what kind of looked like he kind of like stepped out, and they tried to say that he spooked, so he like took a sidestep and moved in front of a
horse. Moved into his lane, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but the issue, what they're saying, basically, is that by halfway through the race, stepping in front of another horse and getting another horse's way and causing one horse to kind of stumble a little bit, almost, was that the jockey had cut the person off intentionally, the person that was behind him. So what they're saying is that the jockey purposefully moved maximum security over to cut the horse off that was behind him,
right,
and then moved him back onto the rail. It is really hard to say. Maximum Security's owners are protesting the protest.
Yeah, I get.
So it could still kind of change, but I mean, it is, that is like, there are rules to these things. You got to stay in your lane.
Yeah, if you're driving in tight traffic, like in a wolf pack on the freeway, and you slam your brakes, it's going to have repercussions to everybody behind you. And yeah. I know they repositioned him in the field based off of, my understanding was they repositioned him like 16th, which was one spot behind the person that he initially cut off that caused them to drop all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I suppose that the rule is you can't leave your lane once you've established it. I understand it, but, boy, that's a... Wow.
Man, it's tough. The first time it's happened. It's really tough.
It's tough ruling, especially factoring in the conditions. I'm with you, John. It didn't look like much to me. We are up against a break, and we have our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer, joining us next. Excellent job, Sam.
Thanks.
And thanks to Early Bird Electric for...